Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Damage Report Lockdown Edition, where nothing's going on. No bad news. Our world hasn't become drastically worse as of this morning. So we'll probably just chat, I guess, because nothing big's happening. Right, Emma?
Yeah, nothing. Why don't we just do what we do off air and talk about, you know, nerdy things and Avengers or whatever. I'm already embarrassed. I already cried on Rebel HQ. I did a little live stream, but luckily I got it out. So maybe we can make this whole episode John trying to make me cry, just saying like sentimental things about Bernie Sanders and seeing if that will actually just trigger me.
I'm going to try. And look, we are going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. I want to give a little bit of time for people to join the stream. I kind of feel like once we start talking about it, then it's actually done. So let's just hold off on that for like 90 seconds or so. For those of you who are joining us, thank you very much. Please like the stream if you are here. We're going to give people a little bit of time. So Emma, we were talking before the show. We'll get to the news. I'll give people an idea of what we're going to talk about. you were talking about the opening day of the last Star Wars movie. Let's start on a high note. Well, okay. I guess maybe not cinematically, but what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that myself and my boyfriend, we bought tickets like 6 months in advance, 5 months, whenever it came out. I guess, you know, well, this is our crossover that you can't appreciate this, but because Disney owns ESPN, the thing that they've been doing is for the Star Wars movies, put the new trailer in the middle of Monday Night Football. And ever since seeing that, I was like, we gotta go. Like, I really love The Force Awakens. And so I had hopes that J.J. Abrams might be able to bring it full circle. But obviously he didn't. The same problems of like lacking any emotional intimacy were super prevalent in that last film. It didn't make any sense. Bringing Palpatine back was idiotic. It was so unnecessary and undercut what was good about The Last Jedi, which I know nerds online freak out about, but I liked it too in its own way, even though it was thematically really different. Like, I love the fact that they talked about how anyone could be a Jedi, anyone could be special. And then, oh, no, she's actually descended from another person who has the Force, one of like the four or five people from the original trilogy. And so, the entire egalitarian message of The Last Jedi is completely lost. It was just like, why even bring J.J. Abrams back if he's going to scrap the movie that came before it and choose not to build on it at all? Give characters like Rose no dialogue. Completely neuter the central relationships. We were supposed to believe that Poe and all of them were like friends. It was just messy.
Well, I get that they'd be friends. I don't know. Yeah. Look, I'm much more okay with people being very critical of this movie because I don't feel like the criticism of this movie is just a smokescreen to hide the fact that they're pissed off that there are non-white and female actors in Star Wars, which the criticism for the early movies definitely was. But I also worry that that criticism is what led to J.J. Abrams walking back so much of what made Last Jedi great. Anyway, as much as I would love to do the entire hour on this, and perhaps we'll return to it because we were talking about Avengers a lot before, and it makes me feel better just to think about it. We do need to talk about politics, and so my team remotely is now managing the Super Chat, so I'm going to be referring to those, so feel free to continue doing that, as well as tweets and comments too. So if you're participating in the conversation, thank you so much for doing that, and we will be reading some of that through the course of the hour. You can expect that we're, of course, going to be talking about Bernie Sanders imminently, but also the brewing controversy over vote by mail, the least controversial topic ever. Why are the Republicans suddenly so against it? We'll delve into it. Has anyone actually died from coronavirus? Leading media figures think maybe not. And let's see. insulin news. And what's in your meat and what's going to be there soon? And what does it have to do with diseases like coronavirus? We're going to get into all that and more through the course of this. So, Emma, are you ready?
I'm ready.
It happened today. Bernie Sanders has dropped out of the Democratic primary. It was something that was looking like it was becoming more inevitable in recent weeks. But not guaranteed, and it happening is going to seriously hurt no matter what. If you've been on this ride, throughout this election, through the last one, the years in between, if you've been following what Bernie Sanders has worked to accomplish, what he's advocated tirelessly for, all of the people that he's inspired, the household names that we now rely on for any semblance of hope, many of whom their entire careers can be traced back initially to the inspiration provided to them by Bernie Sanders, this is a devastating day. And, you know, it sort of works out, though, that it is a day where we're joined by Emma Vigeland. Emma, I kind of need you here on this day because it happened again. They were successful in stopping him.
Yeah, well, you know, we were going to time when I began to cry and the live stream has already happened. Mm-hmm. I think
if you're going to, this is the reason to.
It's fine. You know, I'm just, this is who I am, and I am accepting them who I am. Mm-hmm. So, look, I think what stings most is we really thought it could happen this time. The elation that I felt after Nevada being there, right?
Yeah.
And I left Las Vegas up money. I won a bunch of bets. Like, it was like everything was going right.
Yeah.
And then to have it all come crashing down in this foul swoop of Buttigieg, Klobuchar dropping out, Beto O'Rourke coming out of nowhere to endorse Joe Biden, simultaneously kind of laughing at that while also being scared. And then South Carolina, there was this whoosh. And then I'm in Vermont at Sanders headquarters and everything just seems to keep falling apart. The results seem to be getting worse and worse. The California results were not as decisive as we thought they'd be. And they did it again. They really did. And, you know, I saw Trump tweeting about it, celebrating, talking about how the DNC, you know, is crooked and Elizabeth Warren, you know, should have dropped out sooner to endorse Bernie Sanders, just kind of echoing some of the things that progressive activists have been saying. And that's part of why I think Trump is so politically potent, is he's able to take kernels of truth that undermine the political system and help him, even if it's not the whole truth,
yeah,
and use it to his advantage. And he's certainly going to use the second shivving of the progressive base, the second destruction of Bernie Sanders in his own favor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, con man, scam artists, they always ground it in some kind of truth. I mean, if they're going to get you to buy and then drink snake oil that kills you, they need to at least give you some reason to believe that it could be scientifically sound. So I'm not surprised that he does that. And I also, I don't, like, if he says something designed to aid himself and it contains a kernel of truth, him, honestly, I don't care. Like, I'm not interested in him trying to twist people to advocate. It's like, the story of American politics, in part, is people supporting things that go directly against their own interests, economic and otherwise. And he is just the latest page in that book, effectively.
Let me quickly add, though, he did this in 2016. First event I ever covered in person for one of, like, the major candidates. I went to an event at Trump Tower, and he was talking about how the DNC rigged it against Bernie Sanders and all of that stuff. It's extremely effective, and it's another brick in the wall that he's building to stop Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. I really do think that this part will really help Trump.
Well, let's go to a bit of Bernie Sanders. I, like many people, hundreds of thousands, were watching his live address, and here is a bit of what he had to say today.
I wish I could give you better news, but I think you know the truth, and that is that we are now some 300 delegates behind Vice President Biden, and the path toward victory is virtually impossible. So while we are winning the ideological battle, and while we are winning the support of so many young people and working people throughout the country, I have concluded that this battle for the Democratic nomination will not be successful. And so today, I am announcing the suspension of my campaign. Please know that I do not make this decision lightly. In fact, it has been a very difficult and painful decision.
He reiterated all of the top things that he's been fighting for. If you've, you know, been to Bernie events, if you've listened to a stump speech, he was still very much on message, and that will not change. The only thing that changes, obviously, is, at least in the short term, his chance of becoming president, and that has ripple effects that could not be any bigger. And I mean, I know I saw I posted an Instagram post about this, and someone responded and said, I need you to give me hope. And look, I hope to be able to do that, but probably not today. Like, I could fake it and pretend that I'm just invigorated. That's all I am right now. But that's not what I am. That's not in the top five of what I am right now. I'm hurt. I'm incredibly disappointed. I'm incredibly worried, scared, and anxious over what this means for the general election and what that means for our country if Trump gets reelected. I can't be one of those people that, like, occasionally raises up climate change as a thing that I supposedly care about and then ignore it 99% of the time. It is always in the back of my mind, and I know how little time we have to do something about this, and the prospect of Trump becoming president for 4 more years absolutely terrifies me when I think about the long-term ramifications for our climate. I mean, just so much of it, it's all simultaneously hitting me. And even, like, Emma, like, we think about these things and the consequences all the time, and yet, like, these are the sorts of crystallizing moments where it all becomes so clear.
Yeah, and part of what you say there, climate change specifically, is why I will vote for Joe Biden in the general. I don't say that with glee. I don't say that enthusiastically, but I say that as someone who cares about the planet and knows that whatever half-awake Biden implements will be better than what Trump does. But I have serious doubts that Biden can, carry the ball over the goal line, as Cory Booker said when talking about his mental acuity. So if that's the kind of enthusiasm that is being generated from the base, when you have people like me saying that they'll begrudgingly vote for this person, and in fact, you know, Hillary Clinton probably, I would say, had more enthusiasm than Joe Biden.
Definitely. 100%. Yeah.
And that's scary. And Trump has an incumbency advantage. Trump is a president in the middle of a crisis he's in large part created and bungled this crisis. But we saw in 2004 that doesn't necessarily matter if you have an uninspiring centrist who's running against that candidate.
Yeah.
And on top of it, Biden can't talk. And on top of it, I don't think he has any message. And so we have an uphill battle here. And I will also say that another discouraging thing about Joe Biden is that he is even more, I think, hostile to the left than even Hillary Clinton was. She was pretty open about it. But Biden, his entire career, has almost fetishized working with the other side and making Republicans happy. Hillary Clinton at least kind of hated Republicans because they hated her on a personal level. Yeah. It didn't really have to do with the fact that, she policy-wise was closer. But Biden has never implemented a leftist policy in his life. And I don't see him being even ceremonially accepting of any of the leftist proposals that Bernie Sanders and his supporters are espousing, because even though the party has changed so dramatically in 4 years, Biden had refused to. So what does that say about him as how he would lead?
Yeah, it's an interesting debate to have. Who is more opposed to progressives? I mean, I guess technically Biden at least says he supports some of the policies that Hillary was still rejecting in 2016 when running against Bernie. But yeah, she doesn't have necessarily the documented history of opposition to it. And again, the definitely the fetishizing of bipartisanship. And also the fetishizing of the mythical past. Like, we rightfully attack, I think, Republicans for, like, pining for an America that never existed back in the 1950s.
Right.
But, like, Biden is pining for a 1980s and 1990s that either never existed or was terrible at the time. So, yeah. Now, look, I pulled something earlier today to potentially terrify you, and we will see. So in terms of what effect this might have on the general election, so if it is in fact Biden, which it looks like, barring shenanigans at the convention, it looks like it will be. So let's talk about what effect the current situation is having on Donald Trump and perceptions of him. So 55% of Americans said the federal government has done a poor job preventing the spread of novel coronavirus, sometimes referred to as COVID-19 in the U.S., versus 41% who said the government is doing a good job. Now, back in on March 29th, a slim plurality said the government was doing a good job. So that represents a 15-point swing in net approval in the wrong direction from Trump's point of view in just a week, which might lead you to believe, oh, it looks like maybe this will be a factor that hurts Donald Trump. Here's the thing. What do people think about who they want to be a leader in a time like this? We'll take a look at these two results. So I'm going to go to it in one sec. But I want to hold off as to not spoil. When asked between having Obama and Trump, people say Obama 52%, Trump 38%. When it's Biden versus Trump, yeah, it's an 8-point swing for Biden there. Yeah, they're looking at what Trump is doing, the daily misinformation, the promoting a drug for his own financial interests and the interest of the people around him, even if people end up dying of heart arrhythmias and things like that as a result of it, attacking governors for requesting the aid that they need, just waiting months before doing literally anything. And they look at that and they look at what they've seen from Joe Biden and they say, yeah, I'm going to stick with Trump on this. And if coronavirus is the story of the 2020 election, and how could it possibly not be, and they support him over Biden, how is Biden supposed to win?
Well, okay, so Biden's whole campaign hinges on the predication that he's going to return things to normal, right? But when we're in such abnormal times, people want someone who's going to strongly steer them in a specific direction. And Biden is not projecting strength right now because he can't talk. Are we not, like, I know it's hard to say and it's sad, but Biden is unable to communicate with the American people during this crisis in an effective manner. He's not saying anything. And all of his criticisms of Trump are process or speed related. Like, I would have done this better, or I would have done this more quickly. It's not, no, Trump is doing an incompetent job from the get-go, and this is how I'm different. This is my distinct vision for the American public, and that's what presents strength, what projects strength. And Biden being unable to do that, being completely invisible in that area, even though he's trying a little bit harder on these morning shows, but failing in many regards, is a huge problem in a crisis, because Trump, even though he's lying through his teeth, even though he's made this problem way worse than it needed to be, it was always going to be bad, but Trump has exacerbated things, and I think the American people are so lost in it, they're unable to see that scale. But he's at least communicating with the American public in a confident manner, and they see him on TV every day. And so that's part of the thing that's helping him, his arrogant bluster, while Biden is not really making any sense. Yeah, people are going to pull the plug and go for Trump in that area because he's more visible and stronger in his speech.
Yeah. I just am, like, all I feel is dread for what's going to come. And just knowing that, like the people who have been, like, boosting Biden, like, I wish that I could stuff them full of the drug that supposedly makes you tell the truth and, like, ask them, like, do you really think that he has the best chance? You're saying you're confident. You're saying that he's the person that can beat him. Do you actually believe it? Maybe some do. Maybe some are deluded. And it's not to say that it's impossible. But the idea that he's the best person to put up against him. And almost universally, these are the people that say Trump has to lose. I've been advocating for that. And I've been honest about it. And so I've been advocating for the person that I think actually has the best chance. And that person just dropped out today.
I think those are the same kinds of people who follow a winner, right? The same kinds of people that are just like, I think led emotionally by candidates. If they're being successful, they think that that candidate's going to be Trump, and they never would have imagined that Bernie Sanders would be able to do so. I think something we need to talk about more is how basically ill-prepared the Democratic electorate is in the current way it's incentivized to nominate a candidate that will be effective in a general election, and how behind the times the party is in incentivizing that kind of candidate to come through, how much it squelches populism and pushes forward corporatists that may have a significant appeal to the Democratic electorate that has been built, but one that doesn't play in the general election.
Do you think, so absent everything else, just specifically, if the theory that at the convention he gets replaced happens, does that make it more likely that Trump loses? If Biden does get replaced.
Depends on with who.
If you could roll the dice, you get to say change him or don't change him. You don't necessarily get to say who. Would you change him? Would you go for what's behind door B?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I really think it's going to be bad. You make it a WWE style match with Trump and insults and Biden, who's not forming coherent sentences, is going to be bad.
Okay, so I have two quick games I want to play really fast, and then we'll get back to the Super Chats. And
you probably not the stories. Games.
I do like games. So this is for the audience. Okay, so you have an option to open one of two doors for your candidate. Behind door one, you know, is Biden. The door has a window in it. Behind door two, a random other centrist. Type one in the chat for Biden, two for a random centrist. You don't know who it's going to be. It could be Buttigieg. It could be Beto. It could be Cuomo. It could be Bloomberg. You don't know. Do you want the one? Do you want the two? I'm curious about that. And for you, Emma, really fast, yes or no, replace him with Kamala Harris.
Wait. I don't know. I thought you were going to say Cuomo.
Okay, we'll start with Cuomo. Replace him with Cuomo.
I think so.
Okay.
If you make it about the coronavirus pandemic, the election, that's a good way to go.
Okay. Replace him with Buttigieg.
No.
Replace him with Beto.
No. Wait. Hold on. We need someone who's won something.
Who's won something?
Well, it doesn't make sense. I don't think you can replace him with anyone who's run this election.
You don't think they would?
I don't think you can. I mean, Kamala dropped out before there was even any voting. People will be like, why would we support this woman?
Mm-hmm.
We've gone down this rabbit hole, and I think there are only a few people who could be successful in replacing Joe Biden. And if the election is entirely about coronavirus, the most visible Democrat in America has been freaking Andrew Cuomo, and everyone's obsessed with him.
Cuomo or Gavin Newsom?
Cuomo.
Yeah.
I would rather have Gavin Newsom as president because he's more progressive than Andrew Cuomo. And Cuomo is like kind of a really bad guy, a bully, right? I don't like. But if we're talking about in this crazy time, who can most effectively beat Trump?
Yeah.
I think it's Andrew Cuomo. I mean, obviously it's Bernie Sanders, but they would never in their lives.
Okay, that's fair. So I want to see the media headline. Emma Vigeland says Cuomo most likely to beat Trump.
No, I don't want that because I'm getting in such trouble for it. But I don't mean it as like,
obviously,
I like Andrew Cuomo. I'm from New York. I was supportive of Cynthia Nixon, but like, yeah, I've been rewatching Sex and the City too. God, she's such a compelling actress.
She was just in an episode of House I was watching.
Well, that seems like a fall from grace, but okay.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I don't like House.
We haven't even dealt with our issues over Game of Thrones.
And you're an idiot and no one agrees with you.
You're an idiot. Whoa, I invite you on the show. You're an idiot.
Sorry.
Okay.
Come on, to anyway. Say that season 8 is good, I don't understand you sometimes.
I'm not saying that it's good. I'm just saying it's not as bad as people say, and it's not bad for the reasons that people say. But we're going to have that debate at some point. Some pay-per-view, members only. Anyway, okay, let's read some more. Oh, by the way, I saw the ones and twos and zeros and threes come in. I saw those. There were a lot of twos there. A lot of people would be willing to replace him for a random centrist, which is dangerous, by the way. But anyway, they do. So, Elijah Amott says, thank you to all the TYT team. Today's a rough day, but the fight goes on, and I'm grateful we have resources and new media like you all to keep folks informed. We're going to see Medicare for all in this nation, thanks largely to Bernie and platforms like his. I hope so, but it has definitely been set back fairly significantly. Anakazi says, not going to vote for dementia-addled corporate yes man, not to mention the Tara Reid story. Well, look, he should respond seriously to it. Like, there should be an investigation. He should be asked serious questions about it. At the very least, that should have already happened. And is it any wonder that we got to the end of the primary before he was actually faced with those sorts of questions? Never had a debate, a single debate, with a question about it. If he appeared on CNN and MSNBC and was asked about it, I never saw it. Isn't it weird that we got to that point? Like, imagine the mainstream media, like, the thinking, oh, this whole Bernie Cuba thing, yeah, we'll get to it at some point, but we can wait a few months. Like, no, they were on it. Instantly talking to him about the quotes that he said that were exactly like Obama. But for significant concerns, no, they were not interested in it. Almost instantly after Bernie Sanders streamed that he was going to be leaving the Democratic primary, here is what CNN had to say about it.
What struck me the most there is Senator Sanders, in saying goodbye, did acknowledge that Joe Biden had an insurmountable lead. But he didn't say anything nice about Joe Biden. He did not say he'd spoken to him. He did not say he would work with him. He said it was imperative to beat President Trump, but there was no big embrace of Joe Biden. He said nicer things about Joe Biden back during some of the Democratic debates than he said in saying goodbye.
It was really noteworthy that was not part of his message at all. In fact, it's funny you say that. As he was speaking, I was texting with people in and around Joe Biden asking if he had gotten a phone call because it was so glaringly absent.
Yeah. So the issue they had was that it wasn't fawning. And so they've been begging him to drop out and attacking him for not dropping out. He drops out instantly. That wasn't nice enough to Biden. He really should have been painting a portrait of Biden while dropping out and extolling the virtues of Joe Biden.
It's crazy because he actually dropped out too soon, in my view, and that's still never going to be enough. Now they're already on this train. Once Biden loses to Trump, oh, knock on wood, I don't know what's actually going to happen. My view is that it's pretty certain at this point, and hey, I'd love to be wrong. Once that happens, oh, it's going to be Bernie Sanders' fault, even though he dropped out after the Wisconsin primary, and there were still many, many, many states to go. It's always going to be Bernie Sanders' fault. He didn't significantly kiss the ring enough. And, you know, that's because they despise the fact that he's morally uncompromising, that he's staying on to this day. He's stayed true to his values and what he thinks is right. And they're like, we're not like that. We follow power around like a dog where their owner's carrying a treat and they just follow him around the house. I don't know. Like, that's what they do. So when the fact that Bernie Sanders doesn't do that, oh, it's insufficient. It's very notable. Very notable. He did exactly what you wanted. We're all devastated. The Democratic Party has shivved its base a second time in a row. You did it. You did it. You guys cemented another 4 years of Trump. Congratulations on your tax cuts.
Yeah, and like I've been watching what's been trending. Right now, there are 7,166 tweets with hashtag Bernie Bros on the day that he dropped out, which is what they've been asking for from the very beginning. There's no way he could have satisfied them. And going forward, like, we're checking in now. If Biden falls apart, if he loses in November, no matter what happens, it will still have been Bernie's fault. Guarantee it. It doesn't matter. Oh, like, they were saying
it's your fault, John. You're a Bernie bro. It's my fault.
Me too,
I'm a bro, apparently, right?
Yeah. He could have dropped out last January. He could have not run. And they would have found some way that he wasn't being good enough to Joe Biden. And by the way, as of right now, I mean, things could change hypothetically. It looks like Bernie will do what he has been saying over and over and over again, because he keeps getting asked over and over and over again. He will be supportive of Joe Biden. He's going to stay on the ballot. He's going to continue to accrue votes and delegates while not campaigning, so that theoretically at the convention, virtual or not, he'll have as much leverage as possible to influence the party platform. But he is not campaigning against Joe Biden. He's going to eventually work to support Joe Biden and get Joe Biden elected. At least that's what it looks like right now. That's what he's been saying. Irrelevant. Doesn't matter if he'll be doing that as of the beginning of April on to November. He is still going to be relentlessly attacked up to and including Election Day. And then for the next 6 years, Whoopi Goldberg's going to be referencing it, and Hillary Clinton is going to be doing interviews and podcasts. And there is no way that Bernie Sanders could win from their point of view because of what he represents, not because of what he does.
Thanks for bringing up Hillary Clinton. I am looking forward to her snarky comments about this.
I hadn't even thought about that. Oh, my God. Yeah, I thought that having to see Donald Trump tweet about him would be the worst. But yeah, yeah. God only knows what she's going to say when she goes on, you know, Howard Stern or God knows what she's going to do. How happy she's going to be. I don't even want to know what The View was talking about today, because they probably were popping champagne or something like that.
Awesome. I know. Although justice for joy, hashtag justice for joy. I feel like she's got her heart in the right place.
Yeah, I don't watch much. So I honestly don't know. Yesterday, the Wisconsin election happened. And we could have had a situation where people just voted by mail over the course of the next month. They decided not to do that. They being a whole bunch of people who seemed unbothered by the fact that people are going to get sick and die as a result of this. And the push to move to nationwide vote by mail, both for the states that haven't voted yet, but also potentially for the general election in November, faced a new obstacle yesterday. Donald Trump decided to make it a big focus of his coronavirus press conference. Here is some of what he had to say.
They didn't want to move the election before that. The other thing they wanted to do, which is crazy, at the end of the election, they wanted to have 1 week for proxies to come in or mail ballots. Now, mail ballots, they cheat, okay? People cheat. Mail ballots are a very dangerous thing for this country because they're cheaters. They go and collect them. They're fraudulent in many cases. You got to vote. All these ballots come in. These mailed ballots come in. The mail ballots are corrupt, in my opinion. And they collect them, and they get people to go in and sign them, and then they're forgeries in many cases. It's a horrible thing. And so what happened?
Okay, so that is Donald Trump, despite all of the evidence, which we will get to, saying that voting by mail is inherently fraudulent. It is corrupt. It should be illegal. All of that. So there's going to be some hypocrisy that we get to. But I guess, Emma, I'm curious if you're, like, if you're surprised that we know that obviously the Republican Party would be happy if there were literally no one who votes in this country. But to go so hard against mail voting, that's new, at least from my point of view.
Yeah. Well, studies show and statistics show that if the Republicans suppress the vote sufficiently, they're always successful. So this is part of Trump's attempts to do that. But I think more broadly, it's part of his messaging that the system cannot be trusted. It's a message that was successful for him in 2016. It's a message that he's been hammering on Twitter this morning about Bernie Sanders and the fact that the Democratic Party once again stifled his campaign. And so when Trump's able to do that and basically to broadly say, don't trust this, and there's at least kernels of truth, not in the vote by mail thing, but kernels of truth with the Bernie Sanders thing, obviously, then he's able to skate towards re-election because he sounds like the guy who's calling out all of the shady things in government, even when he's one of the shadiest government figures we've ever seen, using the presidency to enrich himself. And it doesn't need to be true. It just needs to be effective in terms of marketing and messaging.
Exactly. And thus the task falls to us to respond to that messaging to make sure that people are not, deceived, by people who are trying to stop, the electoral system from adapting to the pandemic conditions we have. And by the way, the hypocrisy that he has on this, it was almost instantaneously demonstrated. So he says mail voting is corrupt. It shouldn't be allowed. It is wrong. And then this happened.
Voting, mail-in ballots for voting.
I think mail-in voting is horrible.
But you voted by mail. It's corrupt. In Florida's election last month, didn't you?
Sure, I could vote by mail for that.
How do you reconcile that?
Because I'm allowed to. Well, that's called out of state. You know why I voted? Because because I happen to be in the White House and I won't be able to go to Florida to vote.
So almost instantaneously, it's like, yeah, yeah, it's corrupt, but you did it. Yeah, I did because I can. Okay.
Because I'm above the law. It's truly amazing to me. It's like those same, you know, people that talk about how marijuana is so dangerous and should be illegal, but they tried it in college once or twice or 20 times because I can do it. Right? I can do it. It reminds me of Mike Bloomberg, who had said that he'd choked up a few times or whatever. That was a terrible impression.
I don't even know if that counts as an impression.
No, it was like a slight change in my voice. I gave him some sort of foreign accent that he doesn't have, but whatever. But then he's going to lock people up for marijuana use. It's the same kind of deal. And it's this cognitive dissonance when you're a wealthy white man in America, and Trump's arrogance, only heightens that kind of hypocrisy.
Yeah, and it's like we were saying yesterday with all the Republicans saying, like, no, you should just have the elections. It's totally fine. It's totally fine. Yes, it should be in person. No, it shouldn't be spread out over a long time, because he also attacked early voting, by the way. No, you shouldn't be able to mail. Just go. Man, like I said, how many photos have you seen of Republican elected officials and right-wing media figures standing in a crowded line in pandemic conditions voting? No, it is not for them to do. It's for the serfs to do. They're going to vote from it. They're going to sign, you know, and then do some like a wax stamp on a letter, send it from their castle. That's how they're going to vote. You're going to stand in line, potentially get sick and potentially die. That's how it works.
Yeah, stamp one sigil into the wax or whatever.
That's what I was
going for.
What
would Trump's sigil be?
It would be a little mushroom. Anyway, not going to be more specific about that. And look, we know that this isn't just about, you know, hypocrisy. This is also about their continuing war on democracy. They want to stop people from voting as much as possible. And the reason this is very important is that this isn't just about the primaries. We are worried about what is going to be the current status on election day for the general election. And because we're worried, we want to do something ahead of time to make sure that we will be able to have an election and that people will be able to vote. And one of the big proposals is nationwide mail-in voting. He's not attacking it in Wisconsin, and that's where he draws the lines. He's going to try to stop, by veto if necessary, any spending that is going to allow us to nationwide make sure that we have an election. And they're going to try to depress the turnout as much as possible, not because they're worried about fraud, but because they are frauds and they hate democracy and they know that they can't get elected if people can vote. And really fast, let's run through a couple of examples of that. He literally said recently, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again if vote by mail was nationwide. He said that last week on Fox News. He tweeted that we should fight very hard to stop mail-in voting, even though, again, he did and Melania did and the chair of the National Committee for the Republicans, she did. They all did, but they don't want you to be able to.
Yeah, of course. And I think it kind of brings to a head what Republicans have been trying to do on the state level with gerrymandering and voter suppression that is inherently racist and designed to benefit Republicans disproportionately. It's just doing this on a grander scale. And it reminds me of what Naomi Klein talks about with disaster capitalism, when you have, it's not necessarily capitalism here, it's suppression of votes that leads to more unfettered capitalism, but it's taking a disaster and capitalizing on it for one's personal gain and cracking down on voting, saying that it could potentially be fraudulent with no evidence behind it in an effort to cement one's power. And that seems to be what Trump is doing by discrediting vote by mail when it's obviously not a problem for him to do it.
Yeah. And by the way, and he's saying that this is obviously shady, that if mail-in voting was happening, you wouldn't be able to trust the elections. It's just a Democrat plot, basically. Deeply conservative Utah has moved almost entirely to vote by mail in recent years, while the Republican Secretary of State in Washington is one of its biggest champions nationwide. Meanwhile, blue states like New York and several in New England have some of the most restrictive absentee balloting rules in the country. A significant percentage of the U.S. population, something like a quarter of the votes in the last election, were mail-in already, many of them in Republican states. So they can't be, they're just disingenuous about every single component of this. It is not something that's partisan in its distribution. Republicans are pushing for it in some areas. It's to the national Republicans that are terrified about their chances of winning nationwide presidential elections. And in terms of the fraud, we've read this stat, I couldn't tell you how many times, but an expansive study in 2017 from the Brennan Center for Justice, a liberal-leaning think tank, found that the rate of voter fraud in the U.S. was somewhere between 0.00004% and 0.0009%. It ain't real, okay? The fraud in our democracy is our democracy. But the specifics in terms of how we vote, no, it's not fraud, man. It's just an attempt to justify clamping down on people's access to voting, to get more sites shut down, especially in non-white, poor areas, to have voter ID, all of these restrictions. They don't want people to register the same day. They don't want them to be able to do early voting. They want absentee voting to be ignored and to be as difficult as possible. And that is one of the reasons why we are so critical of the Democratic Party when they mimic these sorts of things. For instance, most especially in New York.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder why the Republicans are so insistent on the census going through, right? You know, we do a census and they can trust those results because they want to make sure that bluer areas that have immigrants are unable to get the funding that they want, blah, blah, blah. That's a long, convoluted story. But they trust those results, but they wouldn't trust vote by mail.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're seeing, obviously. It's staggering. I cannot believe in the same breath that Trump said that he voted by mail, but that he can do it. It was incredible.
Yeah, and it, like, that's the end of the, like, I want the media to be hard on him and to point out his lies, all of that. But again, as I always say, not because I think it's going to matter, just because we should have, like, a facade of, you know, media that's oppositional to those in power. But, like, right. If that doesn't get through, the obvious, instantaneous proof of the hypocrisy, that's not going to get through to his fans. So why would we expect that literally anything else would? Like, they don't care. They don't support him because they believe he's telling the truth. They just support him. That's it. They don't even necessarily know why. He hates the same things that they do. He fears the same things that they do. He'll attack the same things that they want to attack. It's far more fundamental and primal than he's being honest on what he views about election regulations.
Yes, and it's difficult to combat that with a candidate that doesn't have the same amount of enthusiasm on the other side.
Especially if that candidate is going to spend the next few months hiding away. Because now he doesn't have to campaign. He doesn't have to release ads. He doesn't have to go to debates. Like, he's doing like 2 minutes of cable news hits a week as it is. He's sitting at home all day watching Tiger King? I don't know. Bernie does hour-long live streams constantly. Biden, when he was still running against someone, could barely be, like, concerned with turning on a camera. Like, you think now, when he's not even going to have to run against Bernie, that he's not going to be doing anything. How are you going to beat an incumbent president with someone who is acting as if they don't care whether they win or not? Yesterday was absolutely devastating in terms of the toll that coronavirus took on America. The daily deaths spiked significantly, rising almost 50% from one day to the next. I mean, just huge numbers there. 1,970 Americans documented having died from coronavirus just yesterday. Or at least that's what the medical professionals want you to believe. Not everyone agrees with them. So back about a week ago, Diamond and Silk, two incredibly influential right-wing personalities, far more influential than I am or could ever hope to be, said...
No!
Is it not true?
I don't know. They're just...
No, you know it's true.
I don't know if that's true. I don't think that's true.
They're 100 times more influential than
me. I refuse to believe that that's true. You are just as important as Diamond.
Nope.
Not Silk, but Diamond, John...
I'm not even as influential as one of the two, let alone when their powers combine. But anyway, what they had to say last week was people are dying from coronavirus, but it is also being rumored that anybody that dies in a hospital for any cause is being counted as COVID-19. Is this true? We need answers. Let me provide some. No, it's not true. That's a dumb rumor. Obviously, that's not true. And maybe get some answers before you convince or try to convince your viewers who have made the horrible life decision of trusting you for the news that they're just counting everything. That if someone has a motorcycle accident, they're saying coronavirus killed them. How could you possibly think that? But really fast, we talked about that at the time a week ago. And I said at the time, this is a totally fringe thing on Fox Nation. These two very well-known people, that's what counts as fringe these days, that'll become more common, and indeed it has become more common, with Tucker Carlson saying that COVID-19 deaths are being inflated by pneumonia deaths, pneumonia being something that he doesn't understand literally at all. Bert Hume is saying anyone that dies with COVID-19, regardless of what else might be wrong, is now being recorded as a COVID-19 death because, yeah, it's just a coincidence that they died while having the coronavirus. It wasn't related in any way. It didn't have anything to do with Bert Hume. Again, far more influential. He is a walking moron. That is all that he is. And so, like, Mark Levine and, like, Rush Limbaugh, all of them are now saying this. All of them are saying that for one reason or another, you can't trust those death numbers.
And why, if this is such a, maybe this conspiracy is so deep that all of the media figures that hate Trump and are actually inflating these numbers, or the hospitals that are misreporting them, yeah, that's why the government is reporting them too. So what? How do you explain that? How do you explain that the government is reporting these as coronavirus death totals, and it's not just the media or the people that hate Trump?
Yeah, so we talked about it before the show, and here is my thought. So I have come up with the trick that they're going to use to get away from what you just identified. That is a serious problem. One day, Trump is going to go in his presidential press conference, and he's going to say that they're inflated. He's going to offer no explanation for the switch, and even if it's called out, it won't matter. That's the magic trick. He's going to change his position.
It's what he did yesterday, where he cast aspersions on the inspector general and the inspector general's office because the woman, Christy Grimm, had worked in the Obama administration before. You know, she also worked in the Bush administration and now the Trump administration, because she's not a political appointee. But it must have been coming straight from Obama's Chicago home. That's where he got, you know, she got those numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually they will settle on it because when the deaths had hit, I don't know, about 1,000. I think Candace Owens said, 7,000 people die every day from all sorts of things. Why would you care about 1,000 Americans dying? Which is totally what she would have said if this was under Obama.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,000, that doesn't get through. They're really still kind of okay with the huge number that have already died. But at some point, it becomes very difficult to imply that this is not a disaster unless you pretend that it doesn't exist. And so Tucker Carlson did a whole show last night about how things haven't been as bad as was predicted when 2,000 Americans died just yesterday, recorded. And by the way, I'm just going with what people like Mark Levin, who's the chair of the New York City Council Health Committee, pointed out that people who, let me go to one of these because this is pretty important. He said, normally in New York City, 20 to 25 people die at home each day. We are now at 200 to 215 every day, 10 times as many. For sure, nearly all the increase is people with coronavirus, but not all are being counted that way. One reason that the official New York City COVID death count already high is certainly an undercount. Only people who die at home who are known to have a positive coronavirus test have the disease listed as the official cause on their death certificate. We know there are many others going uncounted. So if you die from coronavirus at home and you were never tested, that will not be counted as a death from coronavirus. Maybe someday a researcher will figure out some numbers, but in terms of the numbers we're getting today, that is not being included. And again, I'm perfectly happy to just go with the numbers that are listed and to speculate. That's totally fine. But the idea that this is an overcount, no, there are many reasons to believe that this is a massive undercount. And even if it's not, it is an unacceptable number of people who have died who didn't need to. If our government had done what they should have done, what they were being told to do by people who understood the threat that we were facing literally months ago, these death numbers could be far lower than they are right now. And God only knows what they'll get to within a week.
And you know what also is going to fuel this conspiracy theory is that Black Americans are disproportionately being killed by the coronavirus and infected with the coronavirus because they're disproportionately lower income. And they have to go to work. And they, you know, now we're like weeks away from Mark Levin basically blaming them for it, saying, it's because they had such bad health care and took such poor care of themselves beforehand. That's why they're all dying from the coronavirus. This should not be a national problem. Let's all go back to work immediately and continue going to our Kenny Chesney concert or whatever terrible music we like.
Yes. And let's be very clear. So there's a Mark Levin and I believe a Mark Levine that we've talked about here.
Sorry.
One is a right-wing idiot. The other is the New York City Council of Health head. So those are different people.
Sorry. You're right.
One is on the right side here.
I still don't remember which is which, but fine.
Yeah, one is on Fox, the other, I don't know, I've forgotten. But anyway, yeah, and so it's going to become even more common. It will just be, like, it'll just be the expected thing that now the MAGA tweeters, they're tweeting about hydroxychloroquine. Tomorrow it's going to be the numbers are fake, nobody has died, or almost no one has died. And even if they died, it's Cuomo's fault, or it's China's fault, or it's the WHO's fault. There will be no reckoning, even if in the end 100,000, 200,000 or more Americans die. There will be no reckoning for it, and that is consequential for the election, especially when you potentially have a candidate now who is saying that Trump doesn't have blood on his hands and he doesn't want to get into a political fight over coronavirus. He, in fact, wants to work with Trump to deal with this. Like, what if that's the recipe, what are we making?
What happened to him being an aberration? No, he can't help himself. Biden can't help himself.
Yeah. For some time here on the channel, we've been trying to get an idea of exactly how massive online platforms will be approaching advertising during this election. What will they allow? What will they block? What will they profit off of? We've talked quite a bit about Facebook's struggle to make clear exactly what their requirements in terms of authenticity and verification of information will be. But what about Google? And I've been reading some very interesting things that are developing quite rapidly. We are joined now by Emily Birnbaum, tech policy reporter with Protocol, who's been writing about this recently. Emily, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Glad to have you here. And so as I alluded to in the intro, we initially requested you join us to talk about an article you'd written. That has been updated since then. But can you give us an idea of initially what the story was?
Yeah, so early last week, I started hearing from some sources in Democratic digital firms, that they were not able to place political advertisements that mentioned the coronavirus on Google's dominant, powerful ad platform. And they were hearing from Google that this was due to their quote-unquote sensitive events policy. So sort of quietly, at the beginning of February, Google instituted this sensitive events policy that basically blocks most advertising about the coronavirus, because they said this is a rapidly developing situation. And they were starting to see advertisers trying to capitalize on sort of the frenzy of traffic that's emerged, people just trying to find out more information about COVID. And but unintentionally, what ended up happening was political advertisers were swept in that as well. So if you were a Democrat who wanted to, say, criticize the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus, you weren't able to do that on Google, which obviously, if you're not able to do that on Google, one of the two most powerful ad platforms, you're very limited and your strategy has to pretty much change overnight.
Yeah, and we have to acknowledge that we're in the middle of an election, but this is an event that has been heavily political, and concerns about exactly what the response will be in the future, very political. So I understand why some of these organizations or individuals, their teams who are trying to advertise would be frustrated by this. I'm curious, the sensitive events policy, have you seen this invoked to block advertising, potentially political advertising, in other instances not related to coronavirus?
Yeah, so they usually use it for things like natural disasters, like, an earthquake in Puerto Rico or a shooting. But oftentimes, those disasters, they only last for maybe a couple hours, maybe a couple days, but this is going to last for weeks and for months. And so Google's presented with this sort of unprecedented situation.
And it looks like they have already, either they were already planning to develop their strategy, or some people are saying potentially they have responded to the criticism, but their stance has changed, correct?
Yeah. So they said, when we first instituted this policy and it was very sweeping in when faced with enormous challenges in an unprecedented situation. And now they're sort of iterating on it, and they're saying that they are going to allow political advertisers to talk about coronavirus, to place ads about coronavirus, but they're still kind of working out how they're going to do that safely and how they're going to do that in a way that doesn't unintentionally end up allowing politicians to promote misinformation on their platform. So it's sort of like a delicate balancing act that Google has to do now.
And I know you spoke with, concerning this update, you spoke with some who are worried that the timeline isn't immediately clear, that it's, sure, it's nice to know that at some point they might be able to do the advertising, but will it be in a day? Will it be in a month? Has there been any follow-up from Google that's clarifying anything regarding the timeline for this?
Not yet, but I really do get the sense that it's going to be soon, not necessarily within a month, but probably a matter of maybe a couple days or a week or something like that. They're going to at least provide clarity, if not, you know, totally allow all political advertisers to suddenly place everything they want.
You know, I'm curious, I mentioned earlier that we've had a guest on who's been doing a lot of critical coverage of Facebook and how they've allowed certain campaigns, including the president's, to run ads for pay containing information that Facebook has already acknowledged is not accurate. I'm curious, in regards to allowing critical coverage of the coronavirus response, have you seen anything formal from either, you know, Facebook or Twitter, any of these other organizations, in terms of what their stance is going to be? Are any responding in the same way that Google has so far?
Yeah, so Facebook is allowing politicians to place ads about coronavirus. It's indicative of their larger sort of quote unquote free speech oriented strategy and approach when it comes to political ads. And so I have no impression that they intend to curtail that whatsoever, which could, you know, ultimately lead to, you know, a situation where a politician places an ad that promotes a hoax and then Facebook has to deal with the fallout from that. But right now they say they are blocking ads that promote misinformation about the coronavirus. So for instance, if a politician places an ad that they deem could have real world harm, then they would take that down, but it hasn't happened yet.
You know, and so as we're talking about this, I mean, obviously there's a web of different concerns. You don't want to, these organizations either don't want to in reality or don't want the perception that they're cracking down on people's free speech rights, which obviously they will be criticized for, but they also feel that they have a duty to safeguard the population from getting information that's inaccurate. When you've been talking with either Google or any of these other organizations, has there been any anxiety around that? Like, I know that YouTube has, they've stopped some misinformation around 5G and coronavirus on YouTube recently. But I'm sure that they're being attacked as a result of that. I'm curious how the corporations are feeling, you know, while they're trying to weigh these different concerns.
I just think it is so enormous. And it's been sort of difficult for a long time to get the platforms to, you know, act as quote unquote arbiters of truth. You know, they wanted to stay out of a lot of the messier, more political arguments about what's true and what's false. But right now it's sort of, you know, when Google creates policy, when Facebook creates a policy, the same thing as a government creating a policy in some ways. And what their approach has been to try to take as much authoritative information as they can and just put it at the top of people's feeds or serve it to all of their, you know, millions of users. And it's a huge responsibility. And I think a lot of people who watch these companies say they're taking more drastic actions than they really ever have.
Interesting. Yeah. And yeah, Obviously incredibly consequential. I mean, there are a number of campaigns that need to be able to advertise in the near term around this, because this is going to be not just, you know, the number one issue on people's minds, but it might represent, you know, 50 to 90% of what people are thinking about politics. So, thank you so much for staying on them concerning this, because it is very consequential. Emily Birnbaum, tech policy reporter with Protocol. By the way, we're going to put both of the articles in the description so people can read for more information. And we really appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.